You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Your voice.
Your questions.
Your morning radio with Clement Maniatella.
This is 702.
Right, it's 25 minutes before 11 o'clock. Let's change the conversation now and talk about some of the blunders under the Ramaphosa presidency. I want us to take a step back and examine some of those. And I'm not suggesting here that he may be directly responsible for some of these blunders and mishaps, but the buck stops with him. He is the president, right? And he has chosen to have the people that he has around him. So if he is compromised by his team, well, it's a team that he's built around him. So what responsibility is he taking? And I want you to call in with some of the blunders that you can think of that have happened under the Ramaphosa presidency. You can give us a call on 011-883-0702. You can send us your WhatsApp voice notes on 072-702-1702. I mean, there are blunders that you can think of in government, whether it's the PPE corruption, whether it's the civil unrest that happened recently, the delays in our vaccine acquisition, the blunders in handling our lockdown regulations. Remember the confusion and the miscommunication around the lockdown restrictions, ignoring advice from the scientists, busy implementing restrictions on alcohol that don't even make sense. I mean, one of the things I asked the president about when we interviewed him was, why are you restricting the sale of alcohol at duty-free at the airport when people are buying alcohol to leave the country, right? Why would you restrict that? Because the very basis of restricting the alcohol sales is so that we don't see eventually pressure on our health system. But here are people who are spending money in this country, money that we need, going to have money wherever their destinations are, and you're restricting that. Those are the kind of blunders that have been happening. So if you've got some that you want to remind us of, give me a call or send me a WhatsApp voice note. Ferial Hafaji is the associate editor at the Daily Maverick, and she will be chatting to us about this as we take your calls as well, about your thoughts on what's happened around under the Ramaphosa presidency. Ferial, thank you so much for making time. Always a great pleasure talking to you. Good morning.
Morning, Clement. Great to be with you.
I often, you know, think of the Ramaphoria and the promises that the president made, and then I contrast that with what's happened over the last couple of years since he took over as president. And some people may argue, well, you guys are being unfair because the president is not the one that's directly responsible for some of the blunders and mishaps. But those that are responsible are the people he chose to surround himself with, eh?
Sure. So I think you remember a very key speech that then Deputy Chief Justice Dikgang Mosenekeh made some years ago, where he said that we had invested far too much power in our presidents under our constitution.
Mm-hmm.
That to invest a single person with so much authority almost set them up for failure and led to democratic imbalances. And I must say, watching our system for many years now, that does seem to be true. You know, you and I sat for some years at the Zondo Commission of Inquiry.
Mm.
And one of the reasons things went so haywire is because the former president, Jacob Zuma, just had these unbelievable levers of power that he could manipulate and use. And I think that will come out when the Zondo Commission of Inquiry report is made public later this year. And it's probably a bit of that that's happening with the topic you choose this morning, to look at the blunders of the Ramaphosa presidency.
Yeah. What are some of the blunders that come to your mind, Ferial? I was mentioning here the recent unrest and how our agencies responded. I mean, it's under his presidency that we had over 300 people dying because our intelligence agencies just simply failed to do their jobs. I've mentioned the unrest, and then I've mentioned some of the things that have also happened, like the PPE corruption. I've mentioned the delays in our vaccine acquisition, blunders in handling our lockdown restrictions, the confusion that arose. What comes to your mind?
So I suppose let's do to first do with those awful 8 days in July. I mean, the president had in his hands the high-level report on how to fix intelligence by Sidney Mufamadi, who now is his national security advisor. And unfortunately, because he sat on that for such a long time and didn't make the changes, intelligence was woefully unprepared for what happened to us. And certainly, I think that does bring us to maybe the first thing that our president, he's said to be a practitioner of this long game, and his supporters say it's always worked for him. It's a very good political strategy. I'm not so sure that it works when you are a president. Mm. And there you see, when you play the long game, when you take too long to do things, what happens can in fact be deadly and dangerous. And what I'm also watching with great interest now, Clement, is the president came on TV in that week saying what our country had suffered was a failed insurrection. If you listen to the language today, it's been downgraded to unrest, and there's no more talk of nabbing or arresting or using intelligence to find out who the perpetrators were. So I think that leaves us in a very vulnerable position, because it could very well happen again.
So
that is certainly one. And then on your other question, you know, I keep this running tab of major scandals.
Yes.
I'm interested.
Yeah.
And when I captured it the last time, it was at 24, when I started looking at it again ahead of our discussion today, in fact, three more major scandals have been added to that, and that's PPE, the National Health Laboratory Services, and Digital Vibes. And there may well be a couple of others, but those have rocked us.
So you could argue then that some of these are just own goals.
Well, definitely. I think that the president's supporters and the people who have surrounded himself, also just a note that it's the biggest presidency that we've had in a long time. It's really huge. The numbers of people in there, the numbers of bodies which are run out of the presidency, my colleague Marianne Martin says it's a super presidency. You'd expect greater efficiency. But sometimes I get the sense, listening to the president's advisors, that they're so enamored with him that they're unable to tell him these truths, that maybe you have to move faster, that perhaps the long game doesn't work, that perhaps your politics of accommodation is not great for the country, and that the requirements of modern statecraft means that you have to do things more quickly in order to build this fine country into what it wants to be.
Yeah. Is it enough that the president would often come and concede that there have been some problems and there have been some mistakes that were made, let's say during the COVID-19 lockdown, for instance? I remember he called, he had a meeting with SANEF, and SANEF had a few journalists as well. And I was one of the journalists that were attending that meeting. And the question I asked him during late last year around the lockdown is how overzealous some of his ministers were. And again, he came and conceded and said, yeah, look, we acknowledge that some of our ministers have been overzealous in how they have been communicating the information around lockdown restrictions. Because remember, Bekikele would say, I want to see a slip if you've got cigarettes. Yes. Things like that are not necessarily in the regulations. They're not gazetted. But ministers were busy making up rules.
Walking of dogs.
Yes, walking of dogs. They were busy making rules as they go. And the president was conceding, even with the unrest, he's conceding that we failed to respond adequately. Is that enough, Ferial? Or do we need to get to a point where we say, take some responsibility, because these are the people that you appointed to these positions?
So, you know, concession as a human and political strategy or characteristic really works well. You know, if I say to you, I'm really sorry, I messed up, that generally is regarded as a good thing to do. And if you look, whenever the president does that, South Africans tend to be a forgiving people, and they say, yeah, okay, he's acknowledging that they messed up. So that does work for him. But like you're saying, how far can it stretch? Is this what we're going to see for the rest of his term? And if it is a strategy, then is he going to see a second term? You know, if he is going to be quite a passive president in a time where you require action. Where I do differ with you, and I'd love to debate a little bit, is I think actually we, and perhaps he, haven't done badly at managing the COVID-19 pandemic as it showed up in South Africa. Mm. And here, I guess, I look at his colleagues in the BRICS Club, Brazil, Bolsonaro has been an absolute disaster, you know, quite shameful. In Russia, not too badly managed, but in India, it's really run away from the authority of that prime minister. And so if you look at it in that perspective, in a global perspective, I don't think that we have been the worst. Obviously, there were the National Command Council was overzealous, like you said, and it was probably executing some ideological mandate against alcohol, as you said earlier.
Yeah, but what about the vaccine acquisition, for instance, Aferiel? Because we woke up too late, right? The people that, I mean, we're dealing with a pandemic we've never dealt with before, and I don't know if it's a matter of him closely monitoring the processes or him relying on people that are closely monitoring the processes, because somebody should have told him that, do you know that by January earlier this year, we still had not really clinched a deal? Do you know that we still haven't contacted the vaccine manufacturers directly by January this year? So I'm just thinking here, that was a blunder, and I wonder how much of responsibility he takes as the head of state who should have wanted blow-by-blow information on, are we getting the vaccine? Have we started to talk to the relevant people who can ensure that we get the vaccine as soon as possible? Have we looked at the contracts? All of that relevant information that would ensure that we are not getting vaccines late and start our vaccination program later than we have in this country.
We were very, very slow out of the blocks. Like you, I was watching that worldometer on vaccines, and for the longest time we were stuck at 0%, but luckily it's coming out of the blocks pretty nicely. I guess what we know now with the value of hindsight is that our health minister of the times, William Kizzy, who I thought was doing a really good job, actually had his eye on other matters. And it's not to swing blame, but to agree with you, because if you look at the structure of the presidency, there's a lot of centralization of authority and power in there. The National Coronavirus Command Council operates out of the presidency. So yes, it should have been more on top of things. In fact, I drew up a little graphic. And so in the presidency, you've got the Infrastructure and Investment Office. You've got the State-Owned Enterprise Council. You now have intelligence sitting there. You have the Fourth Industrial Revolution Council, spectrum allocation, and a massive jobs program. So there's a lot of centralization. But do we have the requisite efficiencies and speed coming out of that centralization? Mm. And I certainly think that's a question to ask. I think it was Connie Tahanta who wrote yesterday, and I know that leaders like you in the media often say, why do we not have more occasion not to ask these questions of the presidency? Has it got its comms act in a row? And as a journalist, I'd say no, hey? Under Thabo Mbeki, for example, we got briefed all the time, Clement, weekly briefings at the union buildings, and you really had a sense of government then. Huh? Mm.
And a sense of accountability, because yes, you know, we're not little kids here that you just come and you address and you lay down the law and the rules, so to speak. We need to ask you questions about the decisions that you have made. Federal, just allow me to take some calls, please, on 011-883-0702. Our listeners want to interact with us on this discussion. You can send your voice notes as well on 072-702-1702. Kustas, you're in Midrand. What do you want to say? Good morning. Hello, Kustas. All right, I'll come back to Kustas. Abdul, you are in Temba. Good morning.
Yeah, mid-morning. How's it?
Sharp. Go ahead.
Yes. The first disease of the heart is the love for leadership. The first blunder that he did was to take the late Hugh Masekela, and then use the Tumamina for political campaigning.
Mm-hmm.
So because power hunger leads to bloodthirst. And then you see some of the things that your guest, Ferral, is speak to that very same element of power hunger when the way he's centralizing power within that particular union building. But look, I just want to highlight two things. In the ANC, yes, he has the power to give feedback after the NEC meetings and so forth. But traditionally, we have expected they have been, I mean, accustomed to the center, Secretary General being the one who gives those particular reports. Then when coronavirus became a global pandemic, instead of wearing a white coat to say that the coronavirus, he wore military uniform. So these are just, warning signs that you see to say that the people who are power hungry, ultimately it leads to bloodthirst. So there are certain red flags that we have been seeing. So the biggest blunder was then giving it himself away by the Tumamina, because he who said Tumamina must not be sent, you know.
Yeah.
Universal principle, man.
Okay, Abdul, thank you for your call. Kustos, you're in Midrand. Hi.
Yeah, morning, Clement, and morning to Farrell. Clement, I have a question right at the end of what I'm about to raise.
Okay.
What about these car power ships, where we know that the department employees of DMR really rejigged that contract to favor this company? Today, we're about to lose of over $300 billion, including the gas, over 20 years. So why, now my question to Farrell is, why is it that NPA or Hawks haven't gotten a criminal investigation on the awarding of these contracts that we allowed last year?
Yeah, so Kustos, just to be fair also, we don't know it for a fact, right, that there was, in fact, they rigged the contract. It's the allegations that have been made by one of the companies that they lost. We've had Gwede Mantashe, he's been on the station as well, where he's denied that even his wife or his senior officials at the department were involved in rigging the tender. That project, Car Powership, I think they set that aside in the High Court, and I'll just check to verify my facts. But it wasn't based on that element of corruption, but it was mostly on issues around the processes that were followed and the environmental the access they needed for them to operate, and the environmental organizations were arguing, well, you haven't followed all the right processes. But Ferial, if you remember the cases, maybe you can help me out here. Kustos is asking about that car powership project and the allegations that the tender was rigged.
So that contract was never granted. And in fact, Clement, it's completely stuck at NERSA. And it doesn't look like it's, like you said, that it's going to get the environmental permit that it needs across a range of things,
yes,
from Transnet, from the department. So it looks like civil society has really done a good job in getting a bad deal ended before it even got off the ground or sailed the seas, because there are ships. I mean, I think that thing was going to be like another arms deal, too expensive, the wrong solution for a big problem. But I think there what you've seen is civil society coming to the fore. And for me, that's where our democratic accountabilities are going to lie, in our very strong and active and innovative civil society.
Yeah. Oh, what would we do? What would we do without civil society, Ferial? Well, yesterday we were having a conversation about civil society that often takes these matters to court. I mean, they see that something is wrong here. And we're talking about how maybe sometimes are we skeptical of government or are we just negative? But the issue is there's just that trust deficit. And my goodness, thanks for civil society. Thanks for investigative journalists. Thanks for some political parties who often also take these issues to court and challenge them when they see some irrationality. Let me take a quick ad break, Ferial. When we come back, we'll play some of the voice notes coming through on 0727021702 as we wrap up our discussion.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
Yeah, so we continue our discussion with Ferial Hafaji. We're talking about some of the blunders and mishaps during the Ramaphosa presidency. Let's listen to some of the voice notes you've been sending.
To be fair, our beloved president is a coward. He sits on reports. He doesn't deal with corruption. He just talks about it. And like you say, there isn't money to acquire vaccines. I have a son who doesn't have a mother anymore. I have a 4 and a 6-year-old niece who doesn't have a father anymore, because the man's a coward. And that's just the simple truth of it.
Morning, Manyatela, Manyatela. It's China's here. My problem with this president is he doesn't want to take any responsibility when coming to mistakes. He's more like David Makura, or David Makura inherited from him. The Marikana, life is demanding, doctors died, many things happen under Ramaphosa. So I don't know, this old man, hey, it's giving us headache. Youth, it's not working, so many things. Thank you.
Ferial, does this make him a bad president? I mean, obviously, as a head of state, there are things that are going to happen under your presidency. Some of them are going to be terrible. And how much thinking must we also give to the destruction of institutions before he took over? It doesn't mean that he must escape scot-free and justify the wrongdoings and the blunders based on the mess that happened, you could argue, over the last 10 years. But how much consideration should we give to what happened before he started over and the work he's doing now to fix some of the mess that transpired?
Sure, Clement. So the president did inherit a burning platform. You know, when you have Eskom and Transnet in the state of inheritance which he found them, those are two huge, burdensome inheritances. Institutions which have been decimated, your NPA, the police service, for example. These, and I think important steps have been taken, at least in the NPA, the Special Investigating Unit. For me, is one of our best institutions. SARS has sadly been fixed too well because it's so efficient now. And I do feel that that important work has been done. But what's clear from your listeners is that people are saying, okay, you've been president for almost 5 years now. Time for us to see some action and more rigorous action.
Yeah, absolutely. Ferial, thank you so much for chatting. I think we'll invite you again where we look at what he's been able to do right? We'll look under the Ramaphosa presidency. What is it that he's been able to fix? I know we can talk about the NPA and how he changed the way that you even appoint the head of the NPA. He changed the way you appoint the SARS. He made it more consultative and took the power away from him as the president that has the prerogative to make those appointments. I know that the civil society is getting him to change the way that he also appoints the Chief Justice as well. So we'll bring you back, Ferial, and in our next installment, we'll talk about the things that he got right. Right? The things he got right. Thank you so much for making time. Ferial Hafaji is the Associate Editor at the Daily Maverick.